This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
It's on!
Hi, everyone. From New York Magazine and the Vox Media Podcast Network, this is On with Kara Swisher, and I'm Kara Swisher. We're still on endless tour this week for my memoir, Burn Book, A Tech Love Story, which came out in February. I'm chatting at live events about my 30 years of tech reporting with some major figures in tech and many people I wrote about in the book. For this episode, we're heading to Los Angeles for a conversation with Ted Sarandos, the Netflix co-CEO who runs the behemoth with Greg Peters. Ted joined the business back in 2000 and is really the one who drove the content business. He made binge-watching a thing when, in 2013, he made the call to drop all 13 episodes of House of Cards at once. He also was one of the four studio CEOs who brokered the deals with the WGA and SAG-AFTRA to end the Hollywood strikes last fall. I've interviewed Ted a number of times, but this time he got to interview me at Live Talks LA in front of a sold-out room on March 4th. We'll have that conversation after a long flight and a short break.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline, because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Wow, that guy means business.
Just an amazing player.
No, not him. The sports photographer behind him.
What?
He has a business bank account with QuickBooks Money where he earns 5% annual percentage yield. So he's scoring big on and off the field. You might even say he's the MVB.
MVB?
The most valuable business.
Making your money work harder. That's how you business differently. Intuit QuickBooks. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
I'm going to interview somebody who is a journalist, mm-hmm. but not just any journalist, Kara freaking Swisher, for crying out
loud.
That's
my name.
That's yes. And so I thought, how do you kind of go into this if you're an amateur at it? Mm-hmm. And the beauty of this book is you gave the answer in the book.
Oh, okay.
So
what is it?
I'm going to quote you a little bit here. He said, okay. First, make it a conversation.
Yeah.
We're going to try to do that. It's easy for us.
Yep.
Second, do not be afraid to ask the question everyone is thinking.
Yeah, good.
Third, conduct the discussion as if you were never going to interview this person again.
Yikes. Okay. Yikes for you, really, not me.
So I'm gonna keep your advice in mind and, and be in the back of my head the whole time.
Okay, good.
But I want to talk about this first. The book, the title, Burn Book, it's obviously a nod to Mean Girls.
Right.
So I thought this was going to be like a trashing of a bunch of people. It's a little bit. But it also sounded a lot like a Taylor Swift breakup song.
Yes.
Yeah. So when you think about your relationship with these folks who you built on over the years, what would be one thing? If you could have one do-over.
Do-over.
With any of them and one of, and only one. You only get one.
Oh, wow.
What would you do?
Well, if you go back in time travel.
Yeah.
I guess probably go back and get Mark Zuckerberg interested in something other than tech. yes. Yeah. But I think probably if I had to go back, I mean, it's called a tech love story, right? That's the second part. Because I wanted to make clear that I don't hate tech, and I don't think you think I do.
No.
I think in a lot of ways, I joke about it, I don't like some people have done to the place, right? In terms of tech can be a real gift to humanity. And what I think is at the heart of the book is the idea that really irritated me from the beginning, I think, and not with companies like Netflix, because it was very clear what you were doing. You were selling something, right? It wasn't, you didn't, I don't think I ever heard from Reed Hastings, we're here to bring humanity together.
No, right?
You know, here's
that,
a CD, watch it. I think that was pretty much.
We did use the word connect too much, though, too. We did that,
you?
Too.
Did you? Yeah. Anyway.
It's a very attractive word in Silicon Valley for some reason.
It was like movie watching, got it, okay. Instead of going, you know, instead of going to my video store, I went to Netflix, right? But a lot of these people tried to pretend that they were doing something other than money making. And I don't mind money making. I'm like, fine. And so that's why the first line of the book is, so it was capitalism after all. And it was. Yeah. And one of the things if they had done that, I think I would have rather heard that from them versus a lot of the nonsense. And that they took what was a public thing, which was the internet, which was built by the US government. They took advantage of it, did not have any guardrails, got to do whatever they want because of having this Section 230 to protect them from being sued, and then didn't have the respect to worry about safety, worry about implications, worry about propaganda. And I'm using the word propaganda rather than misinformation because that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's all that it is.
Yeah.
I think that's the only word you can have for it. And I just, the lack of accountability and the lack of care for safety really started to really get on my nerves. The slides and the need to act like children was just kind of weird and performative.
Yeah.
But it just was a disappointment.
Yeah, the first time I went up to Silicon Valley to Netflix, to the headquarters, and I met for the very first time in 1999, and it wasn't exactly the same. They didn't have a slide.
They did not.
But there was no slides. But it was kind of like, it was interesting. There were mountains and mountains of boxes. And I noticed that they were like from places I never heard of, like drugstore.com and razorblade.com. And everyone was buying everything at the whatever it was.com. And they were really living their life very differently than I was, you know, in LA. And this notion, I don't know where why offices had to be like playgrounds, but that was pretty
Netflix's
prevalent.
Netflix's was
no,
not.
No, we never did that. We never
no,
did that.
No, it was interesting. Because there was a dichotomy between like the Apples of the world and Microsoft, which were unfun, right?
Yeah.
Unfun. and, you know, they had chairs, like crazy. And then
you would go. For they got there.
You know, and then you would go to. I mean, Google was the absolute worst. It was crazy.
Yeah.
I don't want to go down your fucking slide. I'm not. I was 36 years old. I'm like, I'm not.
You didn't like slides when you were a kid.
I did like slides when I was a kid. I hated slides. I was like, not again. And it's not happening when I'm this old. And they had like the performative garage door, which was kind of sad to me. I was like, what are you doing? The performative nature of so many of these people was, I didn't know where it came from. It was sort of arrested development of their childhood or something. And it got in the way of what they were doing, which was a much more killer instinct, rapacious information thieves, as Walt Mossberg called them.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they were.
Well, when you, I think of you as pretty tough, and you're pretty cynical. And
when you
think back, I mean, in a positive way.
I'm good.
But I think, so why do you think in retrospect that you believed that these folks were going to be anything other than capitalists, ultimately?
I believe that the technology was groundbreaking. When I first, you know, I have concerns like everyone else about where our world's going, not just from a climate change point of view, but like, how do you get as much information out to people as possible? How do you keep democracy going? And one of the things in the book was the Star Trek Star Wars dichotomy that I sketched out, which was Star Wars is you know, it's very confusing and it's a dark tale. And in Star Trek, it's like I say, it's a United Benetton commercial where everyone gets along and it's so diverse and and the villains become good and they shift them and, oh, I didn't realize I shouldn't have tried to kill people. and everything works. And it's the idea is learning, you know, bold places you go where you haven't been before. And that's my version of it. And oddly enough, I had forgotten that Steve Jobs had said the same thing to me in an interview where he's like, I want Star Trek. We don't have Star Trek. Yeah. And I kind of had that idea of Star Trek. And maybe because I grew up with Star Trek, or you have this idea that you could use technology for good. And you still can. Like, you absolutely still can. What happened was that it shifted rather dramatically to privacy violations, selling you stuff, selling your data for their advantage for when you get nothing back, right? That was the thing, is that you got a dating service, you got a map. By the way, guess who paid for all the maps? The U.S. government, right? They just took our maps that we paid for and then did more with them. And so that was disappointing, because I do think technology has the capacity to do amazing things.
So you were excited about what they were doing and assumed that everyone would be doing good with it. Why not?
Well,
I
assumed that it would be equal. I didn't think that they weren't going to make money from it. I'm not naive.
Yeah.
I just thought the quote in the book that's critical, and I think is the center of the book, is the Paul Virilio quote about when you invent the ship, you invent the shipwreck. When you invent the plane, you invent the plane crash. What I got worried about was, after all this time, now, so many ships, if you live in the Northeast especially, so many ships, wrecks everywhere across there. But the minute they put the lighthouse in, great, everything works. We don't want shipwrecks. But we have not put in lighthouses after all this time. And they're the richest people on Earth. They're literally the richest people, the most. They benefited the most. And we say thank you for what we've done for them. Like, you know, I just feel like it's just not a good trade, particularly a good trade.
Well, I'm going to get back to those guys in a bit. I do want to talk about what's in about the book itself a little bit, because it's really, first of all, it's beautifully done, which
Thank
is a bit of a biography intertwined with 30...
I didn't want to put the personal stuff in. But
I'm going to get to that, because it's really intertwined with 30 years of tech history and a little bit of personal stuff, a little bit. You give us a little bit. And early in the book, you talk about tragically losing your father early. Mm-hmm. Your dad certainly had a big influence on you, seemed to, in the little bit we covered in the book. And in what ways
when your parent dies at a young age, you recognize time is so precious, like very precious. My dad got out of the Navy, got his first job, bought his first house, and he keeled over from an aneurysm, just dead, three kids. Like, he was starting his life. And so I think when that happens, one, it sort of upends your entire life. And then it says, you don't have time. Yeah. Nobody has time.
Gives it could you urgency. Happen.
Yes, you have urgency. And so you don't tend to waste time. And I was like that from very early. I mean, I tell a story in the book where I was in third grade and I walked out of class. I'm like, I've read this now. Let's move on. Come on, let's go. Next. And so I'm often like that. Like, I don't have a lot of patience for wasted time.
Yeah. You only put a couple of even photos of your family in your early days in the picture. You don't mention your mom too much.
No.
She's still with us. She's
with us. Yes, she is. Oh, yes.
And
someone's laughing. Who knows her? Yes, she's still with us. Yeah.
Any reason we don't give her a lot of ink in the book yet? Or?
She's the next book. My brother and I are writing it. It will contain multitudes, let's just say. She's a difficult person.
So you say, and you've said in the past, and there's many examples in the book, of the best way to live your life is to plow through, say what's on your mind, deal with the consequences.
What do you think of that? Have you liked that about
it? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not easy. It's not easy to do. And I think a lot of again, this kind of goes back to this tech ideas of things like radical candor and those kind of things. And there's real radical candor, and there's the things like, you know.
Which you can't do, really. I one time saw him in the Polo Lounge. I was there meeting the Tinder guy. I don't know if you saw me, but you were with I think it was Jeff Katzenberg.
Yeah.
And I saw you trying to convince, you must have been trying to convince him to put stuff on Netflix or something.
I'm sure I was.
Yeah, you
full
were
court
like,
press
and you were
going
so
on.
Charming. I could hear it. It was really funny. I was laughing and I thought, oh man, I would never be able to do his job.
But what you're doing right now and what you did in the book is, I mean, I think a lot of people watch it and say with envy, mm-hmm. because people do walk around not able to, or feel like they're not
yes.
able to say what's on their mind as
yes.
clearly and directly as you do.
Yeah, it's down to me and Elon Musk, right?
But these things come with a cost, right? So what does it cost you over the years?
You know, with really smart people, not a thing. Like, I interviewed Steve Jobs, like, we had lots of beefs,
yeah.
you know? Or Tim Cook, or lots of people. Mark Cuban and I used to beef all the time about lots of things. There's a list of a dozen people like that. I really believe smart people do not mind having smart debates, and they like it,
yeah.
right? Because, you know, talking points get exhausting, right?
100%.
And so I think they really like that. The other thing is, it's really hard when you're in a position of authority, like if you're you or Bob Iger or Tim Cook, you have everybody telling you everything, and you don't know everything, right? I do talk to everybody. And
yeah.
so I have insights that maybe you don't know or might say something. And so most adults welcome that, I've noticed. I sort of mix the adults with the adult toddlers, essentially. and those who don't like it, I don't know what to say. They don't. If they want to be surrounded by people who they pay all day and be told they're really smart, that will make them less good at what they do, and they make bad decisions. Another thing that helps is being right a lot of the time, calling it right, right? I know, I'm sorry, but I have been.
You've done it a lot, yeah. Back to your parents for a second. Is that, like, willingness to, I know you don't like the talk truth to power line, but
yeah,
your willingness or your ability to do that, was that at home? Was that a home practice?
I think you have to in an Italian family. You
yeah.
have to, like, push
yeah.
back, like a super, and you know what it's from? It's from being gay. I honestly is,
yeah.
because one of the things was, I knew I was gay from very early on, and I sought out books, and I was like, oh, okay, this is what it is. This is a very unattractive viewpoint of gay people. Like, this is, I don't believe
yeah.
this. And I used to read a lot of stuff that I didn't agree with. And I was like, that's not me. That's not how I feel. And there's a great book called The Celluloid Closet. And there's also a movie, and it's depictions of gay people.
Yeah.
It was narrated by Lily Tomlin. I highly recommend it, by Vito Russo. They made this doc of it. And it's better as a doc because you see the
yeah.
scenes. And when you start to see it collectively, you see why people hated gay people. You just saw it. You saw the propaganda building. I was
right.
riveted to this movie. And so I was always like, that's not how I am, and it made me furious. And so when people tell me things that aren't true, I'm like, that's not true.
My brother told me about the movie years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He, being gay in Phoenix was very tough.
I bet.
And he called me every once in a while and say, I'd like to come to LA and hang out for the week and be gay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you mean?
Okay,
he,
right.
goes, we can't. His partner and him could not hold hands walking down the street.
No.
It was dangerous.
Yeah,
no,
again,
and,
not again, by the way.
Yeah, and he told me about the movie because he said, and which was fascinating to me, like there were so few gay characters that
That's
you would
right.
actually look for other characters that seemed kind of gay.
Right.
And you'd to identify with.
Right, and also
so,
they
yeah.
were always,
it's a great film,
you know,
really
lesbians were always like, trying to get straight ladies. I'm like, that's not the definition of a lesbian. Like, thank you, ladies. No, thank you. I'm not interested. You're not. Honestly, it's the opposite. Let's be clear. It's 100%. You know. And then, you know, guys were always either really like fey, you know, very prissy. Some are. It just
yeah.
depends. And they, or else they were conniving, you know. But it was always very negative, and everyone
yeah.
was suicidal in the end. And it's just like, and it was just, it really, I have to say, it was the first time I was like, I cannot believe these idiots are saying something that isn't true, and I'm putting up with this. And I think AIDS was one of the, I don't know how old you are, but I'm 61.
Right behind.
And it was very much the AIDS crisis, I think. Really, I wasn't an activist particularly. I definitely did marches and everything else, but I was just like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
This is bullshit. We're dying, and they're just doing this out of discrimination. It's really crazy.
And your turning point into professional journalism was kind of around the same thing.
It was. Mm-hmm.
Seeing the Washington Post cover something badly and then calling them on
yes,
it.
Yes, I stole pictures. Yeah, they
yeah.
wanted to print pictures that were wrong about
yeah.
gay people, and I just hid them.
Yeah.
That's all.
She says with great pride. That's good. I'm with you on the really value of a free press and why it's so important.
Good, so good.
And I was a, I don't know if you knew this about me, I was a wannabe journalist.
Really?
Yeah, I was a high school editor of the newspaper.
What?
And
what was it
and junior college. The Voice was our college paper that I was the editor of. That
where?
I did in Glendale Community College in Phoenix, Arizona. Uh-huh. And I kind of stumbled into it. I signed up to be in high school to be on the yearbook, and it was full, so they dumped me into the newspaper.
Okay.
And it was called The Scimitar, that newspaper.
Scimitar.
And my high school crush, who I've had for like 2 years, was in the class, so I stayed. That was my attraction to journalism. But then I really fell in love with it, and I really admire, I think that I see journalists as heroes and continue to be. And I don't know if you know this case or not, but when I was young in Phoenix, there was an investigative reporter named Don Bowles, who was investigating mob influence in Arizona and was blown up in his car.
Oh, my God.
And he was about to expose the truth, to your point. Mm-hmm. And so it just felt like a very virtuous thing.
Yeah.
I didn't go on with it because I discovered my second year at junior college, I was not a very good writer. So I went to Plan B, I went to business.
Oh, good. Well, it worked out well for you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. So what do you think is the risk or possibility of a free press given what's happening?
Oh, it's under massive attack. Now, look, I don't think the press can't be make mistakes. But, you know, from the very beginning, this country, the strength has been the ability to speak truth to power in some fashion by whoever, not just the press. But, you know, I think one of the things that happens is when you become a post-fact society, it's very dangerous of what happens. And one of the problems we've had is that for a while we were in an information desert, right? I think most people just didn't read the media,
right?
There just wasn't. And people just didn't engage in it. And they had a very small group of things, whether it was the nightly news, which is just three shows essentially, or one newspaper. It still was the attitude of one group of people who owned it, but people had not too much information. And what happened, the opposite, is now there's too much information, right? It's an information flood, and people believe whatever's written in a lot of ways. And so now with Facebook being the distributor of information without any editorial control whatsoever.
Yeah,
and I get their arguments why they don't want to be, but there is an irresponsibility with letting any piece of shit roll over.
So this is an impractical trade, but do you think the world, or let's say the country, was a better place when there was one source of truth, which was maybe Walter Cronkite, even if he was wrong?
I have always welcomed the internet. That was one of the things I liked. You know, I had a big argument with a bunch of people. We need gatekeepers. I'm like, well, you know, because of they're going to protect everyone. I'm like, well, as far as I can tell, all the gatekeepers are straight white men on the Upper East Side of New York, you know, running the networks or the New York Times or something like that. And so I don't think, same thing with Hollywood. It's much better when it's more diverse. So I've always believed in the diversity of the press. It's just that if there's no ability to pull the lies and the malevolent players out, I am the one person who pays attention to Steve Bannon. He talks about flooding the zone. Flooding the zone is with bad information, drowns out the good information. It's just a classic propaganda move.
Yeah.
So that's why it's not diverse anymore. It's malignant. And, and that was the big interview I had with Mark many years. I mean, everyone focuses on the Sweat interview, which I felt bad for him. I honestly did. But that interview about anti-Semitism was troubling for me, for him to not recognize, which he later did, but that amount of anti-Semitism going over the transom with no stopping it. They're going to do it. Anti-Semitism has existed since the beginning of time. Yeah. It is going to be supersized in a way that is impossible to control.
It doesn't need a new spreading tool. Yeah. Well, on a much lighter note, I did learn something else in the book about you that I did not know. Was this your impact from Calvin and Hobbes.
Yes.
And I thought that you were like in a very kind of class of your own in terms of this, but there's a whole documentary about Calvin and Hobbes worship. I don't know. Do you know this?
I don't worship them, but
Dear Mr. Watterson, there's a doc about it.
Oh,
but
well,
you could be.
Was it on Netflix?
No, it's not. I watched it. It was on Prime.
Prime.
That's why you haven't heard of it.
Did you? Well done. I'm sure Jeff Bezos is somewhere crying on his yacht.
Yes, I'm sure he's upset about this.
Do you love his midlife crisis like I do?
makes me very, I'm about to turn 60, so it makes me very nervous.
You have a lovely wife. Yeah. Don't. You have a lovely wife.
So tell, can you share with folks about Calvin Hobbes, how it influenced your thinking?
So that's where I got to understand what was happening, which is the heart of the book is this: everything that can be digitized will be digitized. And I recognized that, I think, a lot earlier than other people. And it was because I was on a fellowship, I downloaded Calvin and Hobbes into my, it must have been a compact computer, I don't, maybe a Dell of some sort, but it was, I was amazed that I could download the book. Like, that was something special. And I really, it was like one of those moments where you were like, oh, whoa. And I remember looking at everything around me. I was thinking the news, and then I saw Craigslist. It sort of was, a lot of those moments were, Netflix too. Yeah. When you guys started putting things digital, I was like, oh, this is what people are going to do once the pieces come into place. And so I downloaded this Calvin and Hobbes book, and it was so clear to me that everything would go on this worldwide network.
It was like a light bulb moment.
It was a light bulb moment. And I kept saying it to people, and I was also obsessed with cell phones, even the big ones. I had the big one. I had the Gordon Gekko one. I had all the cell phones, and I kept saying to people, you know, you're not going to be in the office. Like, and I was also remote 10 years before everybody else.
OG, work from home?
I was.
Yeah.
Mostly because I was such an unpleasant person.
No one was trying to force you back to the office.
I didn't like the office. It was a lot of talking. Yeah. I'm busy.
That for me, it was interesting those early days. Meeting Reed in 1999, he described Netflix exactly like it is right now in 1999.
Yeah.
And the internet was so slow and so expensive for video. Yeah. And I remember him telling me, and I had this, that where you saw it and said, oh my God, it's going to be everything. I thought he might be crazy.
Oh, really?
I wasn't sure if that's really going to happen.
Right.
But he was very matter of fact about it.
Like, yeah.
I said, well, you know, I just downloaded a South Park video. It took 7 days. I don't think this is really going to happen. And he said, no, the internet's going to get twice as fast at half the price every 18 months. It's called Moore's Law. Look it up. And this was Reed.
So
this
what is convinced you? Like, you believed it?
I went home and digested at the meeting. And I said, you know, I don't know that I've ever met anyone who really radically changed the world before. I bet they're a lot like this.
Yeah.
Very sure of themselves,
definitely sure of himself.
Yeah, for sure. And so I said, I don't know if he's right, but if he's wrong, I'm going to learn a ton.
Yeah.
I'm just going to learn a ton.
Yeah, but it just seems so clear once you saw the World Wide Web. Anyone who saw Craigslist, it was so much better. And I think most people were in denial that it was better, right? But I think, you know, at the Wall Street Journal, I was urging them as a young person to really use digital, and they wanted to do another Saturday print journal. And I was like, you really... this is coming.
And we want to get the kids, right?
Get going, because this is over. And one of the things I think press did that they didn't do well was they didn't get the tech expertise they needed to transform themselves. Hollywood's the same way. Listen, that 300-mile thing, the difference between the tech people, so many, I would come down here all the time.
It was so pronounced back
then. There were only two people. I'm leaving Netflix out of it, and you, but because you were part of a tech company, I think. You had sort of the mix of the two.
Well, because we were mailing disk was the cheapest way to move bits around.
Right, exactly.
So it was a tech company, but I'm very...
They liked you for that. You were selling their content,
we were very
right?
low-tech company at the beginning. Yeah.
But there were only two people in the entire... I visited every one of these people. I was covered Napster, everything else. Was Bob Iger and Barry Diller. Were the only people who absolutely understood what was going to happen.
Or
had vague ideas of it.
Back in 2000, the only Hollywood person that ever came to Los Gatos was Peter Chernin.
Oh, Peter Chernin too. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He was definitely. I think it was a real like wanting not to believe it was going to happen. The music people were first. That was where it first hit. And I remember talking to Hollywood people, and I was like, this is coming. Are you kidding? This is perfect.
Yeah. And I think for us, we knew it was coming. Like when we got in, we said the DVDs are going to be dead soon.
What were they calling you? What was Jeff? I just talked to him the other day, Jeff Bukas.
The Albanian Army.
The Albanian Army, when he called you that. And
nothing motivates employees more than something like that.
Yes. Yeah, so he
probably helped us.
You know, we're really worried about the Albanian Army. Yeah. And. I remember when he said it, I called him. I said, oh, man, the Albanians are really good at war. Like, better watch the friggin' Albanians.
Our next company meeting, we had berets and tags.
And he said that. And just recently, he goes, well, I didn't quite mean it that way. I go, stop it. Yeah. Like, just own your Albanian idiocy. And so
people forget, though, Jeff Bukas is funny.
He's very funny.
So I'm sure he thought it was really funny.
You know
when
he sold that company off to AT&T at the right time. So kudos. Well done. Slow clap for him.
We'll give him the Albanian army.
Yeah, right. know, he understood it, but I think they had
that. Bob said, you know, selling arms to third world countries,
right?
They said giving us their licensing content.
He did know that, yeah. But then he did it, right? Then he did it, right?
Yeah.
So you have to, this, what's happening now has to be done, whether you like it or not. And economically speaking, it's really hard. Sometimes, I think one of the things I said, which made some people here angry, was your enemy is not the studios. It's not who you think it is. Now, yeah. I get the salaries. I get everything else. But your enemies are these tech companies. They just literally are going to eat everything in their path. And they have the means and the money to do so. And so, and this was years ago I was saying this. I'm like, and I think media really missed it. I mean, newspapers, was that they thought these people were their friends. And they were, they are not your friends. They are, they want to eat you alive.
Is the book
board.
A wake-up call for this? I mean, honestly,
This new AGI stuff,
yeah.
Who do you think dominates AGI? AGI is going to be devastating for Hollywood. It's going to be devastating for media. They are now, before, you know, there's a scene in the book where Larry Page is, we're in New York, he has to stay in my mom's apartment because of a blackout, you know, and he was going around to publishers to try to get them to, he was starting to put their books on his service without permission. And I was always like, IP, right. You might want to look it up. You can't take people's
things. The out-of-print books first, I
And I kept
too,
calling yeah. him like a shoplifter. It didn't work. He didn't care. And he also, it wasn't even like malevolently not care. He's like, of course I can do it. Like, he had no sense of IP. And it was crazy. And he was like, he went to these meetings with these publishers, and he said, they're not cooperating. And I said, that's because they know you're here to kill them. Like, you're here to kill them. But a lot of people didn't recognize that this was what, and they thought they were there for tools. They thought, we're going to help you. We're going to distribute you. They want to eat everything. And with AGI, they used to just point to it and control it by distribution. Now they're going to scrape everything they can, yeah. And then you're going to have to go get it back. Right. That's the real issue. Anyone with IP should be suing those companies every single day until you get what you want.
That part of it, I'm more with you too on the notion of the human creativity is going to be very not likely to be replaced in this
not
model.
Not likely.
But the tool, like who's like you said, but there's going to be that piece that has to be settled, the ingestion of things and who pays for that and how does it
they
get paid
They should pay
for
you. It's fine if they pay you. Yeah. It's just that here's the thing.
My hope is that these things are digitally fingerprinted so that you're able
That's
to
correct.
Identify.
But YouTube, so. It worked out for YouTube. They ended up, you know, initially they put that stuff up, didn't do anything about it, and then they worked something out. Now, same thing with music in a lot of ways. So what are you going to do? Although, look, Universal, someone told me last night, Universal pulled their music off of TikTok. There are tons of fake Taylor Swift songs on there now, made by AI, like it's
on TikTok. Yeah.
So what do they need that for? They will do anything to suck and scrape your stuff and remake it and mush it up in some way.
Right.
They did that with me, which was amazing on this book tour. There are fake Kara Swisher books all over Amazon, right? With very attractive, comely photos of me. AI generated, they're terrible. I look really strange, Femi. And they were up there, and my wife saw it. She's like, what is this?
Who is this?
Who is this? In the search. Yeah. And I was like, what is this? What is this? And I realized what it was. It was AGI. And I wrote Andy Jassy, who's running Amazon, and I essentially wrote, what the fuck? Like, and he's like, oh, no, it's you that it did it
to. Of all the people. Of
I know.
All the people.
He said something like, of all the gin joints in the world, they had to AGI you. And it got some attention. But, you know, I was just with Savannah Guthrie, and they took something of hers. She has this Faith in God book. They made a workbook that is, and it happened to your
wife too.
They created a workbook next to it that isn't hers, but they didn't just do that. They didn't just take that down, which is a lie. It's her brand next to it,
right.
Or your wife's brand.
Just knock off of the cover. And
right, it's a knock off the cover. But then it said, buy Savannah Guthrie's book and the workbook.
Oh, they put them together.
That's right. Wow. And they were selling my book with my fake lady books. You know what I mean? And I was like, fake lady doesn't get sold with Kara Swisher, but like, who gets the $16.99 for that? And then the customer gets a crappy book.
Which they think
it's my fault. Like, honestly, the whole thing is, but they still make the money, and they should have anticipated this 100%.
We'll be back in a minute.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and this is Unlocking Us. In this podcast, we'll explore ideas, stories, experiences, research, books, films, music, anything that reflects the universal experiences of being human, from the bravest moments to our most brokenhearted moments. Some episodes will be conversations with the people who are teaching me, challenging me, confusing me, maybe ticking me off a little bit. And some days I'll just talk directly to you about what I'm learning and how it's changing the way I think and feel. The first episodes are out now. We're going to do 3 or 4 part series every quarter, so about 12 to 15 episodes a year. Unlocking Us will always drop on Wednesdays. And now you can find me wherever you normally listen to your podcasts. You can get new episodes as soon as they are published by following Unlocking Us on your favorite podcast app. And as always, stay awkward, brave, and kind.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docuspecial on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
I loved your OKR list for identifying a partner, your wife, and how you vetted your wife, I guess, through the list.
Yes, I did. And it's objective key results.
Objective key results, yeah. But your wife would have to be kind and generous, emotionally available, compromise ability, intuitive, kind to your kids. These are like, as you go through life and you think about that list, which seems like it served, the list has worked very well.
Yes. A month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there were a similar list for a tech CEO, what would that be?
There are a lot. I have a whole chapter about it. I really like what Mark Cuban's done with himself. I really do. Yeah. I think he's doing, go watch him on Twitter. He's doing God's work arguing with them all about diversity, equity, inclusion. He's like trying to make, you know, considered arguments of his experience and say, this is why I like it, this is why I don't, this is what the good thing is, this is why it's a good thing. And he's a business person, so he's telling you from a business point of view why he's doing it. And then Elon's response is always, you're a moron. Like, fucking idiot. Like, he doesn't want to have a discussion about it. He just wants to dunk on people. I think Mark Cuban is someone who's really, he was a real tech bro boy. Was he a tech bro? But he has changed, and he's doing the stuff with cost plus drugs. I like anyone that that moves forward as a person, right? Brian Chesky is another good example. He's made a lot of mistakes. I don't mind mistakes. Evan Spiegel is another person who really was a bro. Like, what a bro he was. I've had an argument with him right near here at lunch where he blamed me for his college emails, which I was like, listen, dude, that was you. That was all you writing terrible emails. So anyone who progresses is good on my, or tries to do something and recognizes their responsibility.
I would put like in your next version. I would nominate Reed Hastings
to be in there.
Because on top of all those things, I think he has
Reed in with these people. He's an adult. Talk about an adult. Yeah. He's an adult.
And he orchestrated the succession of the company over about 10 years.
He did.
And while he was a young man, left.
Yes,
he did.
He's got things to do.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put your company in that. I don't find your company. It's hard to place Netflix. But yes, Reed is an adult. He is in the Tim. If I put him in a group, it would be Tim Cook, him, you know, a lot of people like that.
And you think very highly of Steve, but I mean...
I love Steve. Steve. I know his faults. I know all his faults.
Yeah, I was going to say, I love your the prick to productivity
ratio.
Yeah. And in my limited interactions with him, he was pretty high on the prick scale. And
he was, yeah.
Before he got to the productivity scale part.
Yeah, but the productivity was off the charts.
The productivity caught up, yeah.
You know what? But I bet he was a prick not about... You'd never see him... dunk on Twitter. It was about the product, right?
Yeah, always.
It was always about the product.
I got a call a Saturday morning when we were about to put Netflix on the app on Apple TV, and someone called me and they said, "I think you should get on this call. Steve Jobs is on screaming at everybody about how ugly our red our logo is," and all the people didn't know what to say to him.
Yes, right. But it was about the product.
But he was on with a bunch of junior engineers talking about the color in our logo on how it looked like on his product.
I'm okay with that. It was about the product.
Too,
see, that's the thing which was really interesting about him is it was never, literally, he would never, you don't know what Reed or Tim Cook thinks about Ukraine. We have to endure these venture capitalists.
What do I need to know?
Like, let me tell you what to do in Southeast Asia. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Well, quick rapid fires. Someone you never get tired of talking to, interviewing.
It would have been Steve Jobs. He was really interesting to talk to, especially about products. I really like talking to Satya Nadella. He's really interesting. He's really a very complex human being, and I think he's done a terrific job there. I always like talking to Cuban. He's really fun. He's a fun guy to go out with. I like talking to him. He's always...
He will answer a text in 10 seconds.
Ten seconds. But it's always interesting, and he doesn't always agree. Like, we had a big debate about Elizabeth Warren and the wealth tax, which was... He was fun. I always like talking to Steve Case. I like Steve Case a lot. There's a lot of different people. I'm going to try to name a woman. Because there just aren't there in tech as many as there should be. Mary Meeker was really interesting, and she's not really doing that when she was an analyst. I really like talking to her. Lisa Su, but that's, you always end up talking about chips, and I'm completely out of my element with her. She's really cool. She runs AMD. A lot of people.
Katie wants to know, your oldest kids are about to enter the workforce.
Yes.
If they wanted to work at a FANG company, which one would you tell them to apply to and which one would you tell them to avoid?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. My 18-year-old's at University of Michigan, and he is he's a science engineering. So he's the most technical person of the two of them. And so I wouldn't recommend him going to any of them, actually, because they're not the future of what's really interesting in technology. I think climate change tech, biotech, the stuff around healthcare is really astonishing. So I think that's where he's headed. For my other son, he just was in a movie, Ted. He doesn't like social media. He took it all off his phone. He said it makes him feel bad. He was good. He was like, I feel bad every time I use it. He does like YouTube. He watches stuff on YouTube. He does watch my Netflix, sorry. But he's going to be off soon, I swear to God. I just can't believe I said that.
We got an eye on him.
Good. I did kick my mother off.
Selective enforcement.
Yeah. So I wouldn't recommend, I don't, none of them. None of them. I wouldn't want them to work for anyone.
TJ asks, it seems every few months there is a wave of panic about TikTok in Washington.
Yes.
Do you think the concern about TikTok is overblown, understated, or is it being given the appropriate level of concern?
It is not overblown. I wrote a column a couple years ago saying TikTok's the most exciting new product I've seen in a long time. It's entertainment. I think you think it's entertainment. I think you've talked about that. And I'm using it on a burner phone because Chinese Communist Party. This is a surveillance device, a surveillance or a propaganda device. And it's already bad enough when it's for capitalist reasons, but this is a country that has really, everyone talked about that balloon that was over our country. By the way, there's many more balloons than you think, but I just talked to someone who's tracking all the, there's a lot of balloons flying over our country. It's crazy. We're so stupid. there's no balloons, our balloons flying over China, but they're flying over us. It's not the Chinese people. It's this government. This is a surveillance economy. And I very much like a lot of the people who work there, and I like the product. I think it's a great product. But if we can't have social media in their country operate without any thing, they shouldn't be able to operate in this country. That's one. Two, I just think some of the people I've talked to who are really smart about this stuff, someone who's leaving Congress, Mike Gallagher, is quite smart about it. Mark Warner, Bennett, all these people who've seen a lot of this stuff are very clear what's happening here. We cannot, this is a real problem. And it's not because kids love it. If they separated or somehow found a way to protect it, they just cannot assure us that the Chinese Communist Party isn't. And if we can act all like, oh, they don't really want to beat us, but they really want to beat us. They really do. And we've got enough fascist problems in this country, authoritarian problems, that we don't need to add on, you know. And they've come in and done so much propaganda, and why wouldn't they? That's what they do.
Carrie, do you think, way predating TikTok, do you think Steve Jobs understood the addictive nature of this?
He talked about it. He did talk about it a lot. I think he thought the business plans of things like Facebook and others were by nature addictive and deleterious. And he hated the business plans. He hated the advertising nature of it. He hated the idea of virality. I'm not sure. There are elements you can do on this phone to make it less addictive. They haven't done nearly enough stuff to make it less. These are by nature casino machines. And so I urge you to read Tristan Harris. But there's certain things they could have done, put things files below and not let it happen. Like Uber is not something you go on and sit there and stare at it. It's just a utility, right? Same thing with Netflix. You kind of watch. You have your watching the next thing. But people do have some control of their entertainment. They don't sit there endlessly. But a TikTok and things like that, you can't stop. It's addictive by nature. So, yes, I would say we're not doing. I think we have to think really hard. I have agreed with exactly zero things that Donald Trump does, including his just existence, really. He was correct on the danger of it. Executionally, as always, as he does with everything, it was wrong, and it wasted a huge opportunity to have a real bipartisan discussion about this. He wrecked what should have been a really important discussion in this country.
Linda asks, regarding the gender pay gap in tech, Mark Benioff at Salesforce recognized this about 10 years ago and tried to address it. What about the rest of the industry?
You know, actually, numbers are getting better, but it's not more of a pay gap, it's a people gap, that there's not enough people. It's just, many years ago, one of the best leads I've ever written on a piece, and I edited it myself, so I thought it was great, and I wrote it, and I approved it, was a thing. I used to write pieces that it was just one piece, and it wasn't really a written piece. There were three in a row. The first one was called The Men and No Women of Facebook, and I just put their pictures up.
The Men and No Women.
Right. Yeah, it was just no one in the management. This is pre-Sheryl Sandberg, even. Right. And she ended up apparently representing 8 women, I guess. but it was really amazing how the very few people they had. This is early, early Facebook. And then I wrote The Men and No Women of the Web 2.0 boards. And it was because boards you can get. Yeah. You can really find a diverse group of thinkers. And same thing. Was all the same thing. And the one board that drove me crazy was Twitter, which early on had 10 white men. And so so my lead of the story was on the board of Twitter, which has 3 Peters and a Dick, which was so good. I should have left journalism. I was like, and I'm out.
Mic drop on that one.
In the head of it, Dick Costolo called me, and he's like, I said, first of all, if that's your name, that's your name. I don't know what to tell you. And he's like, very funny, very good penis joke. I go, thank you.
And he was a comedian, right?
He was a stand-up guy. He goes, but it's not fair. And he said something to me, and he's actually one of the better guys, goes, you know, but we have standards. Always the word with women and people of color, standards. And I was like, well, let me look at your stock price and your results and everything else, because it looks like you're a clown car, which Mark Zuckerberg called it, a clown car that ran into a gold mine. You guys are fucking idiots. Was that the standard, fucking idiots? And he was like, well, when you say it like that, and I was like, well, when I say it like that. So there were no standards. And what's incredible is that it persists. Yeah. This idea. So it's either straight white men are the best people on earth, or maybe they're wrong, like, you know, like kind of thing. And so I think the line I use in the book is they think it's a meritocracy and it's a mirrortocracy. They really do like hang out. And I'll leave you on this. There's a reason why tech is unsafe for people, or the unsafe parts happen because the people who created it do not feel unsafe. and they're never unsafe, and so they don't understand it. And this is not some whiny liberal talking about it. They don't think about implications. They don't think about consequences. And they, as we're go, this book is 2 years late for my publisher, but it's actually on time. With AGI, we need to think very hard about the implications of what's going to happen. And we have to set guardrails, and we have to stop listening to them tell us that if we set guardrails on them, innovation will die. It will not die. It will thrive if we set some guardrails. It's like kids, and this is a bunch of kids who've been given sugar for far too long, and they have diabetes, and they're fucking nuts. And so, you know, that's it. Thank you.
On with Kara Swisher is produced by Naeem Araza, Christian Castro-Russell, Kateri Yoakum, and Megan Burney. Special thanks to Mary Mathis, Kate Gallagher, Andrea Lopez-Cruzado, and of course to all the folks at Live Talks LA. Our engineers are Fernando Aruda and Rick Kwan. Our theme music is by Trackademics. If you're already following the show, you can binge listen to my book. If not, I will not speak to you after I get on the New York Times bestseller list. In any case, search for On with Kara Swisher and hit follow. Thanks for listening to On with Kara Swisher from New York Magazine, the Vox Media Podcast Network, and us. You can subscribe to the magazine at nymag.com/pod. We'll be back on Monday with more, but hey, we also have a special bonus episode coming tomorrow, Friday.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.